welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Feature. I have a fabulous guest. He's got more movies than I could ever enter his head. Myth and Mutants is his, not his latest movie, people. Part 2 is his latest one of these, but this is part 1. So expect part 2 in probably the next month or two, whenever we get around to it. Ryan Calavini, welcome back. Calavine, sorry, I don't know why I said that. I'm getting crazy.
I'm going nuts. It's okay. I appreciate having me on again.
So this is, I want to discuss this and say, this is something you've never sent me before. This is a short film anthology, I consider it. I mean, you can call it one film, but it's really a bunch of short films, let's be honest.
Sure. Go ahead. I lost my train of thought.
Okay. I'm just saying, normally when you send me something, it's a creature of the week, a monster feature, and something happens. This is monsters constantly. So for me, how do you approach this differently than you do your other things?
Well, this I did a few years back, and it was kind of accidental because I was really doing a lot more of the folklore and legends stories. And then I dove into Pennsylvania folklore, and there's like all these crazy cool legends. I'm like, a lot of people may have heard, not have heard, but that stuff falls away pretty quickly. Like no one really knows much about it. So I dived into it, and I thought this would be great if you could tell it like, here's the myth or folklore of the story, but then I add my own little twist and make it a fun little piece. And we started working on those, and I just kept going with them. And there was like a dozen other stories I wanted to do, but never got to them. But it just started off by accident, just doing some folklore investigating, and it just snowballed from there.
Okay, I want to go. So the ones you didn't investigate, are they in part two?
Part two was a complete accident as well.
Okay, so do you want to save that for our next part two, or do you want to tell me now?
I can just tell you real quick. Part two, okay. I originally had a bunch of other folklore stories I wanted to hit, which were like Pennsylvania, Ohio, and New York. And I just, I kind of put it to the side, but I had two folklore stories I really liked, which was the Hans Trapp story, which is like a German folklore story. It's not really a Pennsylvania thing. And then the Legend of the Pigman, which was a New York folklore story. So I was originally going to shoot two films, and we started shooting them like that, like two films at the same time, which became ridiculously hard for me.
I was going to say that. You're good.
So I'm like, you know what's cool? This is really kind of a Myth and Mutants thing, but I just kept it as a complete fiction story. You don't really get the background on really what the real myths are. And I'm like, let's do it Grindhouse style and put them together like Quentin Tarantino's Grindhouse movie. And that's sort of how part two came out, which was different than the first one. But that's, I always think you should make your sequels look different and feel different. So that was
okay. Let's work on that for a second.
Sure.
I don't know how many, I've only seen your films. I've never seen a sequel from you. So are there other sequels for other films that you've done that I haven't seen yet?
Sure. There's the Mountain Devil movies. There's three of those, but those are all about Bigfoot in Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
and those are, seen them. They're kind of set up like Myths and Mutants, which you get factual stories that are eyewitness accounts. And then there's a little bit of fictional stuff put in there too, just kind of to keep it entertaining more or less.
So let's go. Okay. Who did the illustrations? Let's start there. Then we can go easier that way.
Boy.
I know it's a while ago.
I can't remember the guy's name. It'll come to me. I use them all the time too. Anyway. Yeah. I have this great artist that does these illustrations for me. And we just started, like I said, started making those as shorts, and I'm like, let's just pull some animation, some cool drawings in there just to kind of fill in the gaps a little bit. And he came up with some great stuff. Of course, I can't remember his name offhand, which I'm a horrible human.
It's okay. You're not horrible. We all have bad days. As we continue, did you just want to do Pennsylvania folklore, or all of these are from other places? It's not just Pennsylvania.
Myths and Mutants, the first one, is all Pennsylvania. And there's a dozen more I could have done. And then as I looked into it, like every state has this great catalog of weird stories. Like, and a lot of people have never heard of them. And I'm like, you've never heard of this or that. And I just feel like it's history that's going to get lost. So part of the whole Legend of 100 Films thing is to like grab old folklore and history and kind of make it, you can make it into a horror movie. You can make it into a documentary. You can kind of create it how you want. But the five that I chose out of Pennsylvania, I thought were like the coolest damn things I've ever heard about. So that was a great starting point for Myths and Mutants. Hopefully maybe we can do a third one down the road. But like each state's got crazy folklore if you just look into it.
So when you're researching this, obviously you have to do a lot of research, I presume. I mean,
Sure.
I would say, do you do more than internet research? Do you actually go to a library? Do you check out books? What do you do?
Sure. Anything I read like on the internet, like a good folklore story, there's actually Weird Pennsylvania. They've done every state. I think those books are great. They've got a lot of good stuff in them. But every town that had a folklore story, I went to the historical societies and asked them, "Do you have anything back to this story?" And some people would chuckle and be like, "Oh, that old folklore story." But they would direct me to someone who could tell me something. So a lot of those shorts that you see in Myths and Memes are the people I actually talked to about the history of the folklore. And some towns were like, "No, that's just all blah blah blah," and they wouldn't give me anything. But that was a cool part, was actually meeting people that knew a little bit about the folklore and could give me something to talk about, because a lot of the historical places, they don't have like paper records of it of any sort. But there were still people that knew the stories and wanted to tell them, which I think is great. It's like the old campfire stories when you go to camp and that, the camp counselor guy always had a scary story to tell. And every town has that stuff, and I think it's a lot more fun in knowing that your town has this weird folklore story, you know?
So the people that you have two people mainly in the film, a man and a woman, talking about the legends, introducing them, and then you go into your short. Now,
Sure.
did you have more to choose from than the two, or just the two were your only options?
Two were the only options that were willing to go on camera.
Really? So some of them said, no, I won't go on camera.
Yeah, a lot of them weren't interested. They just thought it was, just a horror movie, and they did not want nothing to do with it. A lot of historical places, like a lot of those people are—I'm not trying to be mean—but they're usually older folks that are running them, and they were just like, "Oh, that's cute. You're making a movie. I don't want nothing to do with it," But
So,
go
did you
ahead.
have to coax them at all, or did they just tell you what you needed to know?
No, the few people I got to interview were all good about it and wanted to talk about it all day. They were troopers about it. It's funny how you start to go down this path, and like once you talk to one person, usually they know someone else, and I could have kept going with more interviews, but like when you're editing, you only have so much time. So I keep trying to keep each short to an extended time and get the folklore story out there, then let's go to some fun fictional story that we just came up with just to keep it entertaining.
So there are fictional stories in this too, then, not just.
Just the ones that the people talk about is like the backstory of the folklore, but then, we kind of go into this whole
Right.
smorgasbord of fun for a little bit. Like the albino cannibals, there was no guy running around with a chainsaw that I'm aware of, but I made it that way.
No, you were having fun. That's great. Now, Mike, how many costumes did you use throughout the shoot, or did you reuse costumes?
I think there was five, I believe, and those were all original made costumes. So that's one thing I always stress, especially indie filmmakers, man. Like, if you're doing something visual, make it worth visual wow, And they have this great lady by Joyce Long, her name is, and she comes up with the craziest costumes for me on the dirt cheap, which is great because she's made costumes for theaters and knows how to go to the local dime and thrift store and find stuff and make them into something really cool. So I applaud her every time I come up with something. She's like, "Oh, I can make that on the cheap for you. Don't worry about it. We'll find it." So she comes up with a lot of these costumes that blow my mind. She does an incredible job.
Now, how'd you find your actors? Because I mean, each short I find is a little bit different.
Back when we shot that, I had a small crew of actors that I still work with to this day. There's a few new ones that came on board when we were shooting that one, and they stayed on board, which is kind of cool. So I have this melting pot of actors I kind of go to, and I'm like, I'll say, "Hey, I'm shooting this. I really think he'd be good for this part." And they either come on or they don't. So it's nice to kind of have my own little talent group of people to go to. Especially living where I do it, like it's hard to find people that are into this type of stuff and are actors of some degree, whether they're theater actors or film actors. It's a thin line up here.
So, how long did you spend on each short, or what was harder to shoot than the others, or they're all about the same?
I think I shot that throughout the whole summer, off and on.
Okay.
I think actually we had this old farmhouse that a friend of mine let me rent real cheap, and I think we shot two just there at the farmhouse for a few days, and we just kind of maneuvered the cameras and so you didn't see this or that. And that's a great thing about filmmaking, make it work. If you have one good location, make it work, you know, stretch that dollar bill out as best you can.
Well, especially as an indie filmmaker, I mean, you may only have one location because that's the only location you can afford.
Pretty
So
much, yeah. I mean,
you gotta use
oh
it.
yeah. I'm trying to think. We some of the old locations were just friends of friends that let me use. Like the witch segment was at a place called Bulger's Rocks, which is these huge rock formations, and they were like, "Yeah, go ahead." But I think now if I went back, they'd be like, "No." A train tunnel we used, which was like nearby. I didn't really get permission. We just kind of went and did it, you know.
I didn't hear anything,
Yeah,
so I didn't
you
do anything.
didn't hear a thing,
So,
ask for forgiveness later.
like, that's what I think you have to do as a filmmaker a lot, I guess. I mean, you've been shooting. I mean, generally, I know you live in a small town. I'm not asking you to tell me where. Do you expand your horizons every film, or even with this film, you're like, okay, I can shoot this here? Or do you have four or five scripts on the go and you're just like, oh, found that location. We'll go film there today.
Every year is a little different. Like last year we shot Missing Mutants 2, and it was just this kind of the same thing. I had some really great locations. I'm like, well, this would be great for this story. Let's shoot it this way. And we turned the camera this way and shot it for the different film. And it just really depends what's going on. I really try to stretch a dollar as far as I can.
Of
And
course.
it's good to have friends with locations. So always keep your friends in mind. Who own like restaurants, bars, you know, wherever you can use. And they're usually, you know, most of the people that know me around here doing film, they're always helpful. And they're always like, go ahead, use it. So I'm very grateful for every little bit of locations we get and use. And script wise, I always have like probably four or five sitting on the computer ready to go for next year or the year after, or whatever, you know, we can possibly do.
So, what's your reaction to this? Do people come up to you and going, "Hey, you made that up. I don't like that," or "I loved it"?
I usually get positive feedback. Every once in a while, you get someone that, you did that wrong. Well, oh well, sorry. But most people don't even know about these folklore stories, which is kind of cool. So it intrigues their interest, and then they're looking them up. A good example is Missing Mutants 2. It was the Hans Trapp story, which was a German folklore story. They thought it was just something I made up. And here he's like this anti-Santa Claus figure. If you look it up, he was pretty gruesome. So it was pretty cool to like kind of educate someone on some new stuff, and then they're kind of intrigued by it, and they start looking stuff up a little bit. So I always find it a little bit fun that I'm still a little bit educating, even though it's folklore that means nothing and it's useless garbage you got to put in your brain. But it's a lot of good fun. It's a little different than your normal horror film. I mean, it's got a little something that you could actually look up when you're done.
Well, that's what I was going to get to. I would consider you a horror filmmaker.
Sure.
And I'd say this is a little different than what I normally expect from you.
Sure.
So when you're promoting this and doing this, do you do exactly the same things or do you do different things?
No, I keep it all the same. I mean, I promote it as this is a anthology horror film based on folklore, which was cool because when we did Missing Mutants, that last segment, the albino cannibals, was a short that I really loved, and the actress involved, Nikki Carlson, liked it. So, like, I think it was a year or two later, we went and made Guts on the Chainsaw, which was based on that short, and we kind
I've
of just,
seen that one.
yeah. So that's how that one happened, was just kind of an extension of short we made a long time ago, and we're like, that was fun. Let's just make it a full feature now. So a lot of stuff kind of connects in some weird way in the Cavalini universe of films.
Did you add CGI to this in the fire scene?
Probably, yeah.
Okay. I was presuming. I gotta ask because you're on a budget, so I always want to know how you do things.
Yeah, some things you can't blow up or set on fire, which is a real bummer, but you
I'm sorry, your location, we're gonna take it out this week, just so you know.
sorry, but you know what's sad is like AI's here, and like I get hated on, and you probably hear about it too, like, oh, AI is a horrible thing, but for an indie filmmaker, use those tools. But why not? Now you can make your building on fire look great now.
I think, okay, well, I guess we get this for a couple seconds. I find maybe you and yourself, I can recognize AI things. I'm like, that's AI now. Before,
Yeah.
maybe a few years ago, I wasn't sure. Now I'm
Right.
like, that's AI. And they use it at my work now on posters. I'm like, that's AI poster. I
Yeah.
can just tell. I'm like, why'd you guys waste your time? Like, I know you need to get your message out there. I understand why you guys made the poster, but it looks
Sure.
bad.
Sure. But I mean, if you're on a budget and you got to get it done, that's, what it is. I get it. It's just the times are changing.
I guess so. So do you just dump your films on Tubi? Like Myth and Legends just gets dumped on Tubi, or do you dump it everywhere? Or do you try to just go Amazon for a bit, or it doesn't matter to you? Just get it out there.
Myths and Mutants was picked up by a distributor, Wild Eye Releasing. They picked that up a few years ago, and it's been out for quite a while. And they had a little. They usually have their own releasing plan, like it goes here first, then goes there second. So it's been out for quite a while. Now, Myths and Mutants 2, I've kind of held on to the rights to that, and it's available right now through Blood Streaming TV for free. I really haven't decided which direction I want to go with that yet. So I'll sit on a film until I figure out in my head what I want to do. It might take a while. You gotta watch trends and patterns and see what's going on, and then
Hold on. I want to
yeah.
tell you, good point there. You sit on your film,
Sometimes
but you have money in this film, is my question. Don't you want to make your money back
I do,
ASAP?
I do, I do, but I've kind of pulled back and try to keep more of the rights to my films as much as possible nowadays. Now, when you're going through like a film aggregator, you know what I mean.
I do.
You can do it the free way, but you're not going to get anywhere. So now a lot of these places
Okay.
want money up front to get them on the Tubi, get them on these higher streaming levels. So sometimes it's kind of a waiting game until we get kind of some production money back before we can do that. And that's okay because like sometimes it's like a slow burn. I want to try DVD for a little bit. We'll try a couple of smaller streaming outfits for a little bit, and then we'll try to get to the bigger platforms.
I guess my argument is, I mean, you have been around a long time now,
Yeah.
and you have a solid body of work.
Sure.
So I would expect people to want your stuff, is what I'm trying to say. You're not offering them one film, you're offering them 10 films.
Well, most of the films are out. I mean, that just Myths and Mutants 2 really haven't gotten to a level where it needs to be. Like, I just released Haunted America earlier this year, which was a haunted ghost documentary we did. So I don't want to hit them with another film right off the bat. So you kind of wait a little bit and let the stew stir up a little bit, and then hopefully by this fall it'll be out.
So when you're doing your actors, you think they'll be good for this part. Do you give them, I guess you obviously have to send them a script, I understand that. But in a sense, you're like, okay, I need you Saturday. I need you Sunday. Okay, that's all I need you for. Like, you got to do that. How does that work for your scheduling when you have so many people on a short?
It's a nightmare.
Okay, that's what
It's
I
just
expected.
right, because these people are, they're volunteering their time, or like what actors I do get that are maybe SAG actors, you have to pay them something. It's a scheduling nightmare because I'll usually give two dates out. Hey, can you hit this one or this one? And then we kind of narrow it down. Depends on a location. If I can only get a location for a certain day, I'm like, this is the day. I don't know. Be there or don't. I'll figure it out. If you can't make it, we'll find someone else. So scheduling is a pain in the ass, and that's probably the biggest headache. And that's the producing end of making a movie, which sucks. But once everyone's there, everything goes, and we're all happy campers.
So, when you were making this film, did you have a legend that maybe you wanted to do but wouldn't fit because you didn't have the budget?
No, I hit the main ones I wanted to, but the funny part was when I was making those shorts, like the Albino Cannibal one, I'm like, this would make a great feature. And we did later what we went with Guts on the Chainsaw, which was a little bit different. Another one I was looking at was The Goblin of Easton. I find that to be an amazing short, but I'm like, that would be an amazing full-length feature film, which I have a half script written, and that's one of the films I'd love to see done down the road. So the a lot of ones I've done, I'm like, I'd love to do as a feature now, but time and money.
You're getting there. So, do you take, when you get these films, do you actually take them on the road and go to indie film festivals or anything like that, or you just ship them?
I usually try to just go right to distribution. I mean, I've done a few film festivals. I'm not a real big fan of them anymore, just because you don't know. You really got to do your background check with film festivals anymore. I mean, there's a lot of decent ones out there. I'm not taking that away from anyone, but there's a lot of scumbaggy ones out there that are just cash grab type of film festivals. So if you're a filmmaker, please do your research before you submit a film to something. Make sure that it's a legitimate film festival that's going to be there for you, and not just take your money and be like, thanks for, submitting. I'm kind of bitter on
I kind of got that impression
that.
from that. It's fine. I'm just trying to get some questions.
It hurts.
So
It hurts. It hurts. Like, you're stealing from filmmakers.
I guess I should feel bad. I guess I should check into the film fest I judge for, making sure they're okay. But I'm
Well,
doing it for 3 years, so I presume they're legit.
when you go to a film festival and they just show the films on the screen and like, that's it, thanks for coming, I take that as a cash grab. Like, they did nothing for the filmmakers involved. Like, if you have other events going on and things going on, you're promoting the event, that's different. But there's a lot of them that don't really do much of anything.
Oh, I don't know what to say here because I've been to two film festivals and had a good time at both of them. But I mean, there were filmmakers there and I had a good time and they seemed legit to me. But I mean, I don't know.
Right. Well, that's just something you got to look into before, throwing that hard-earned money away. Just make sure it's going to benefit you, I guess, more than anything.
So, what do you do if you're filming a short and somebody doesn't show up? So two out of three people are there. You're missing one. I'm sure this has happened.
Oh yeah. I curse them out.
Fair enough.
I quickly go into rewrite mode real quick.
Okay.
That happened with the Miss Amuse too, the hand strap portion. We were the one of the main actors didn't show up, so I got there before everyone else and started rewriting the whole damn scene for the day. It's just, you do it on the fly, make it work, because if not, I'm going to lose the whole day. I'm going to lose the location and what actors I do have. So you got to be creative on the fly.
Okay, interesting. I'm just trying to figure out. I don't have any more. I think you've killed me already today. I'm gonna see. I think we're. Oh, drone shot. You do have a drone shot in there.
I'll do some drone shots if, if need be. I'm not like, oh my God, we need a drone shot here. If it has time and I can do one, great. If not, I don't worry about them as much.
Okay. Let's go back to your two people talking to you about the thing. Did you have to tell them, or they just, I mean, they're not actors, they're just people, right? They're coming, are they regular storytellers, or did you give them direction at any time of how to chate, speak?
No, usually I would just set up the cameras and like just talk to me like we're having a conversation. Don't worry about
Okay.
anything that's going on. I'll edit later, and I'll just sit there and ask them questions or tell me about this, tell me about that, and then it just becomes a comfortable like two people just having a coffee and having a drink and just talking really. And I'm like, don't worry about this, the shit going on around you, and that's that, And usually they'll loosen up, and it's pretty easy, and they'll tell me what I need. And then I'll be like, well, now we're going to do B-roll shots. I just need you to turn your head real slow this way or
Ah,
that way. Or I'm
so
like, oh, someone else filmed shit while we're talking. So it's no big deal.
did you film them all in one day? Like,
Oh, no.
no.
No. Like, a lot of those shorts were like 1 month we'd shoot one, next month
Oh,
we'd shoot.
not the shorts. I meant the people.
Oh, yeah, those were all different days.
Really? Can they look like they're wearing the same outfits every day?
Well, the one lady we did have to shoot two different days. I take that back. And the other guy we did a different day. Yeah, there might have been more than one day in there. I can't remember. It's been so long now, I don't remember.
I'm sorry. I know it's been a
Okay.
while.
My brain's just like, I don't remember yesterday,
Are
let
you
alone
going
5 years
to be
ago.
better at number two? When I get to number two, you'll have more for me than I don't remember.
Oh, I probably forgot half that shit too. That was a year ago.
Okay, you got to keep me more current then, okay? You can't keep doing this to me.
I'm sorry. Well, currently we're making another anthology film called 13 Steps to Hell, which is all nothing folklore. It's just straight shorts that I've had for years.
Good.
And it's like Creepshow, but extended.
Okay, so when you come back on, discuss that, you'll remember things.
I'll remember that a little bit better.
Okay, good. Okay, let's move on to some con questions then, so we're good.
Sure.
July 4th just happened. Do you remember that?
Yes, I remember that.
What was your favorite thing you ate?
Me and the girlfriend ate at a restaurant up in Erie, Pennsylvania, and it was a pork chop with like some type of vegetable. It was like some sauce on it. It was the best thing ever. It was amazing.
So
that doesn't tell
you
much. It was a pork chop with some type of stuff on it.
Some random restaurant here in Pennsylvania, people from pork chops, please go there. Ryan recommends you.
It was near the mall. I don't remember the place.
Fine. Number two, your favorite weekend activity besides shooting a film?
I've started doing a little bit more horseback riding. And
I'm afraid of horses, by the way.
We kind of got into it a little bit. And every once in a while, we'll go out for like an hour or two. And I don't
That's
know.
awesome.
It's something different other than filmmaking. So I'll take it with stride.
And last question, your favorite decade of film?
Oh man, it had to be like the 80s, man. It was the best time back in the 80s when you had when horror had characters that were like our superheroes. You know what I mean?
True. Yes, I do.
It was such a glorious time when like you rooted for the bad guy, and that was great, and it was fun horror. I don't know. You couldn't wait for the next Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street. Like those were our superheroes, you know?
It's very true. I would
I
give
miss
you that.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, tell everybody where you can find your 8,000 productions.
About everything's on streaming. You can find that everywhere on Tubi, Amazon, hard copies, legendhunterfilms.com, and all the social media platforms with Ryan Cavallini or Legend Hunter Films.
Thank you for your time, Ryan. Until next time.
Thank you, sir. 1,000 thank yous.